Simon & Schuster Audio presents A Stolen Life, a memoir by J.C. Dugard. Read by the author.
Dedicated to my daughters, for the times we have cried together, laughed together, and all the times in between. This book might be confusing to some, but keep in mind throughout my book that this was a very confusing world I lived in. I think to truly begin to understand what it was like, you would have had to be there. And since I wish that on no one, this book is my attempt to convey the overwhelming confusion I felt during those years and to begin to unravel the damage that was done to me and my family. You might be suddenly hearing about a character that was never introduced, but that's how it was for me. It didn't feel like a sequence of events. Even after I was freed, moments are fragmented and jumbled. With some help, I have come to realize that my perspective is unique to abduction. I don't want to lose that voice, and therefore I have written this book how it came to me naturally. I'm not the average storyteller. I'm me, and my experience is very uncommon. Yes, I jump around with tangents, but that's sometimes the way my mind works. If you want a less confusing story, come back to me in 10 years from now when I sort it all out. Introduction. Let's get one thing straight. My name is J.C. Lee Dugard. I was kidnapped by a stranger at age 11. For 18 years, I was kept in a backyard and not allowed to say my own name. What follows will be my personal story of how one fateful day in June of 1991 changed my life forever. I decided to write this book for two reasons. One reason is that Philip Garrido believes no one should find out what he did to an 11-year-old girl, me. He also believes he is not responsible for his actions. I believe differently. I believe that everyone should know exactly what he and his wife Nancy were doing all these years in their backyard. I believe I shouldn't be ashamed for what happened to me. And I want Philip Garrido to know that I no longer have to keep his secret, and that he is most certainly responsible for stealing my life and the life I should have had with my family. I'm also writing my story in the hopes that it will be of help to someone going through, hopefully not similar conditions, but someone facing a difficult situation of their own, whatever that may be. It's easy for people to be horrified and shocked when someone is abducted. But what about all the other adults and kids living in sad homes? My goal is to inspire people to speak out when they see that something is not quite right around them. We live in a world where we rarely speak out, and when someone does, often nobody is there to listen. My hope is that society changes in regards to how we treat someone who speaks out. I know I'm not the only child to be hurt by a crazy adult. I am sure there are still the families that look great on the outside, but if someone were to delve deeper, they would discover horrors beyond belief. For many, it is so much easier to live in a self-made backyard that it can be tough and scary to venture out and leave that comfort zone behind. It is so worth it, though. You could be saving a person or a family who is not able to save themselves. Take my case, for example. Two Berkeley cops saw something amiss and spoke up about it. Even if they would have been wrong, they still did the right thing by speaking up. I will forever be grateful to them for doing the thing that I could not do for myself. Back then, it was a struggle to get through a day, but now I look forward to each day and the next to come. After 18 years of living with tremendous stress, cruelty, loneliness, repetition, and boredom, each day now brings a new challenge and learning experience to look forward to. With my writings, I hope to convey that you can endure tough situations and survive. Not just survive, but be okay even on the inside, too. I'm not sure how I did endure all that I did. I ask myself less and less every day. I used to think maybe the one reading this would find the answer for me, but I am beginning to think that I have secretly known all along. Ask yourself, what would you do to survive? My situation was unique, and I can't begin to imagine what others are going through in their daily lives. You can survive tough situations, is all I can say. I did. History has taught us that even when it looks like there is no hope, hope still lives in people's hearts. T.S. Eliot once wrote, "I said to my soul, be still, and wait without hope, for hope would be hope for the wrong thing." My trust and hope were indeed put in the wrong persons, but nevertheless, it still lived. I am so lucky and blessed for all the wonderful things that I do have. Life is too short to think about all the things you don't have. I had my girls to give me strength and my cats to keep me warm at night, and perhaps, deep inside, the dim hope of seeing my mom again. Even if it is just one thing or person you have to be thankful for, that is enough. Yes, I do believe I'm lucky. I could not have gotten through my ordeal without believing that someday my life would make sense. Life's adventure is important. It is important to live each day to its fullest, whatever life brings you. The Taking. It is an ordinary Monday morning school day. I have woken up early this morning of June 10th, 1991. I am waiting for my mom to come in my room before she goes to work to kiss me goodbye. I made a point the night before to remind her to kiss me goodbye. As I lay in bed waiting, I hear the front door close. She has left. She has forgotten. I guess there's always tonight when she gets home from work to give her a kiss and a hug. I'm going to remind her that she forgot this morning, though. I lay in bed for a while until my alarm tells me it's time to get up. I wait another 5 minutes and then push myself out of bed. I notice that the ring that I had bought the day before at the craft fair is missing. Darn! I really wanted to wear it to school today. I search my bed to no avail. If I waste any more time, I will be late for the bus, and then Carl, my stepdad, will be mad at me, and then I will have to ask him for a ride to school. He already thinks I mess everything up. I don't want to give him another excuse not to like me. Sometimes I feel like he is just waiting for another reason to send me away again. I abandon my search and decide to wear the ring my mom gave me 4 years ago for my 7th birthday, before she met Carl. My 11-year-old finger is getting too big for it now, so I don't wear it often. It is made of silver, very tiny and delicate, in the shape of a butterfly, to match the birthmark on my right forearm that's almost level with my elbow on the inside of my arm. The ring also has a teeny tiny diamond in the center of the butterfly. I try to slip it on, but it feels tight on the finger I used to wear it on, so I try it on my pinky and it feels better. I finish dressing. I decide to wear my pink stretch pants and my favorite kitty shirt. It looks cold outside, so I throw on my pink windbreaker. Then I go across the hall to peek into my baby sister's room. Last night my mom was folding laundry in the baby's room, and I was sort of helping as I laid on the bed. I used the time to try to convince my mom how much I needed a dog. I guess I was a little annoying, because she just kept repeating the word no over and over again. It's just I really, really want my own dog. There are puppies down the street from us, and every chance I get, I go down there and pet them through the fence. I don't know why I can't have one. The other day, I had to write a paper in school about if I had one wish. I wished for my own dog. I would name it Buddy, and he would follow me everywhere and do tricks and love me the most. I really hope my mom will let me have a dog one day. I showed my 18-month-old sister a new trick last night, too. I showed her how to jump up and down in her crib really high. It made her laugh so hard. I love making her laugh. She is almost ready to start climbing out of her crib, I think. I peek in and I see she is still sleeping, so I creep out quietly. I feel a little queasy this morning and briefly consider telling Carl, my stepdad, that I feel sick and can't go to school today, but change my mind to avoid an argument. The truth is, I really don't want to stay home all day with him anyway. I look forward to going to school most days because it gives me time away from all his criticism. Maybe eating some breakfast will make my tummy feel better. I go to the kitchen to make my lunch and breakfast. I decide on instant oatmeal, peaches and cream flavor. The microwave clock reads 6:30. I know I must start up the hill soon in order to catch the bus. I eat my oatmeal quickly. I'm glad Carl isn't in here watching me scarf down my oatmeal. He already thinks my table manners are atrocious and takes every opportunity to let me know what he thinks. One time, he didn't like the way I was eating my dinner, so he made me go sit in the bathroom in front of the mirror and watch myself eat. I don't think I'd ever make my kid do that if it was me. I just don't understand why he doesn't like me. I make a PB&J sandwich for my lunch, throw in an apple and juice box, and check one more time to see if Shayna is awake yet. But she's not, so I must leave without telling her goodbye. I haven't seen Carl all morning. I think he must be outside, because he is not inside like he usually is, watching TV. I see my cat Monkey, outside on the deck. My grandma Ninny gave him to me before we left for Tahoe. Monkey is a black Manx, which means he has no tail. When we got him, I wanted to name him Sapphire, because he had the bluest eyes. But Carl thought it was a stupid name and just started to call him Monkey. At first, it really made me mad, and I called him Sapphire every chance I got. But as Monkey has grown, the name Sapphire really doesn't suit him, and now I call him Monkey too. It's funny how you can get used to things. Monkey mostly stays outside, but I let him in at night and he sleeps with me. I don't like to leave him outside at night because my mom's cat, Bridget, was eaten by a wild animal after we moved up here to Tahoe. It was awful. We had been looking for her for days, and I finally found what was left of her, which was nothing more than a pile of fur. It was really sad. Monkey must have been separated from his mom at a young age because he loves to nurse on my fuzzy blanket. I think he thinks I'm his mom. I go outside on the deck and give him a pet hello. He meows for food, so I give him a little handful of cat food. I have also brought out a carrot for Bugsy, the black and white dwarf rabbit that's not so little. Carl had Bugsy when I met him a few years ago. I think the cutest thing about Bugsy is his love of grape-flavored popsicles. It is my job to clean his cage, which is not my favorite thing to do. He really poops a lot. I read in a book once that rabbits eat one poop a night. It's funny how sometimes animals do things that don't make sense to people, but I think they must have a good reason for doing it. I just can't figure out what that may be. I make my way out the front door, down the long walkway to the stairs. Our house in Tahoe reminds me of a ski cabin. It is located at the bottom of a hill. We have lived here since September of last year. We used to live in Orange County. We had a break-in at the apartment we were living in, and my mom and Carl thought it would be safer if we moved to Tahoe. We live in a much smaller town now. I grew up in Anaheim, California. I've always thought that when we moved in with Carl, he convinced my mom that it was time that I started walking to school by myself, because I had never done it before. I don't think my mom liked the idea very much, but she couldn't be there to drive me in the morning because she had to go to work early. So that left Carl to take me, and sometimes he would and sometimes he wouldn't be there, so I had to walk. They gave me a key to the apartment we lived in at the time, and that was the first year I walked home from school by myself. One time, as I was walking home from Lamson Elementary, where I went to fourth grade, a car with a group of guys in it started shouting at me and gesturing for me to come over. I started running and hid in a bush until the car passed. Then I ran home as fast as I could and locked the door behind me. I was scared to walk home after that, and did it as fast as I could. Sometimes my mom or Carl would pick me up from school. I really liked those days. Tahoe feels nothing like Anaheim. I can ride my bike anywhere, and I don't feel afraid here. There is a neighborhood dog named Ninja that comes over and walks up the hill with me some mornings. I want a dog of my own so badly, one that would walk up the hill with me every morning and then be there to greet me when I come home from school. Ninja the dog really prefers Carl over me, though, and usually only waits for him and goes on walks with him on the weekends. This morning I was so hoping that Ninja would come over and walk with me, but as I head out, there is no sign of her anywhere. As I leave the house for school, I yell to Carl that I am on my way up the hill. I don't see him or hear him answer, but see that he has his van out of the garage, so he must be working on it. I start out on the right side of the hill, and then when it starts to curve, I switch to the other side. I have one more week of school left, then summer vacation starts. I have made plans with my friend Shawnee from school to work at a dude ranch. She loves horses, and sometimes she draws them for me. I love the way she draws horses. She has taken me on a trail ride before, and I loved it. She is a great rider. She used to live with her mother on a ranch, but now she lives a mile away from me in an apartment with her grandma Millie. I am so excited about our plans. I want to be as good a rider as she is one day. I still have to work up to asking Carl and my mom if I can do it, but I'm hoping it's something that will let me try. Carl is always saying I need to have more chores and that I need to learn more responsibility. So what better way for me to learn than to get a summer job? Well, at least that's how I'm going to present it to him and see what he says. Carl's sister, my new Aunt Em, has two horses. One is a girl and the other is her baby foal. I love to go visit her. She is so nice to me compared to Carl and his mother, W. Em acts like she really cares about me. She lets me sit with her on her horse and we walk around the arena. It's so much fun. She also has a really cute Cocker Spaniel, which loves to wrestle. I like visiting her. She seems to really like me. When I lived in Orange County, I was in a jazz class. I really didn't enjoy it very much. I really wanted to take ballet. But when my mom went to sign me up, the class for ballet was full, and so we went for jazz. I'm really shy, and performing in front of people is not a strong suit with me. We moved to Tahoe right before my final recital. Thank goodness. I think I would have messed up if I had to perform in front of an audience. And wearing a leotard was not my cup of tea either. When we moved to Tahoe after school started, I joined a Girl Scout troop. Again, not my idea. It's hard to make friends, but some of the girls are also in my class, so that makes it easier. I just wish I wasn't so shy sometimes. I usually hang out with Shawnee, although she is not in my troop. But the girls are all nice, and I like it when we make things and sell cookies. I am not good at going up to strangers' doors and asking them if they want to buy some Girl Scout cookies. I am very good at eating Girl Scout cookies. My favorites are Samoas and Thin Mints. When it's my turn to go up to the door and sell, I knock on the door and let my partner do the talking. Will I ever get over my shyness? We have a class field trip to a water park coming up the last week of school. I want to go and have fun, but my body is changing and I'm self-conscious. I tried the other night to talk to my mom about shaving my armpits and my legs. I am so embarrassed to be seen with all that hair. But I didn't know how to start that conversation. Need to think of something soon, though. The trip is only a few days away. As I am walking up the hill to the school bus this chilly day in June, I am thinking how sometimes it feels like my life is dictated by something or someone else. For instance, when I play with my Barbies, I can plan out their lives and make them do all the things I want them to do. I feel sometimes that this is being done to me. I feel my life is planned out for me in a way I do not know, but on this day, I feel like a puppet on a string and I have no idea who's on the other end. I am coming to the part of the hill at which I have been taught to cross to the other side. Carl and my mom taught me this when we moved up here and it was decided that I would walk up to the bus stop to catch the bus for school. Carl said I should cross here so that oncoming traffic could see me and I could see what's coming at me too. As I cross the road at the bend, I lose my train of thought and start to daydream about the summer. I walk in the gravelly part of the shoulder of the road. I haven't seen any cars go by at all this morning. There are bushes to my left. As I am walking, I hear a car behind me. I look back, expecting the car to pass on the other side of the road, going up. But to my surprise, the car pulls up beside me. I was so lost in thought that the unusual behavior of the driver didn't register with me. I stop walking as the driver rolls down his window. He leans slightly out of his car and starts to ask me for directions. His hand shoots out of the window so fast I barely register he has something black in his hand. I hear a crackling sound and I feel paralyzed. I take staggering steps back, fear erasing everything but the need to get away. As the car door opens, I fall to the ground and start to push back on my hands and butt towards the safety of the bushes. Scooting as fast as I can is my only goal. To make it to the bushes, away from the man that is coming to grab me. My hand connects with something hard and sticky. What is it? It doesn't matter. I must hold on to it. Someone is dragging me, and now I am being lifted. My limbs feel like they weigh a ton. I try to resist and try to push further into the bushes. The paralyzing feeling returns, accompanied by a strange electrical current zapping sound. I am helpless to resist for some reason. I don't understand why my body is not working. I realize I have peed my pants. Strangely, I do not feel embarrassed. No, 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 I cry. My voice sounds harsh to my ears. The strange man hauls me up and shoves me into the back seat and down onto the floorboards of his car. My brain feels fuzzy. I don't understand what's happening. I want to go home. I want to crawl back into my bed. I want to play with my sister. I want my mommy. I want time to reverse itself and give me a do-over. A blanket is thrown on top of me and I feel a lot of weight on my back. I feel as if I can't breathe. I hear voices, but they are muffled. The car is moving. I want to get out of the car. I twist and turn, but something is pinning me down. I start to feel embarrassed about losing control of my bladder and want to get up and go home. I feel like I can't think right. I know what is happening to me is not right, but I don't know what to do. I feel scared and helpless. The car is moving and I feel sick. I need to throw up, but I'm afraid if I do, I will choke to death, so I resist the feeling. Something tells me they wouldn't help me if I did. I am so hot. I feel as if my skin is burning. Please, please remove this hot blanket. I can't breathe. I feel like yelling, but my voice feels dry and nothing comes out. I lose consciousness. When I wake up, I hear voices. The car has stopped. Where are we? I hear two voices. One is male, and the other is muffled and low. But it doesn't sound like a man's voice. The blanket is still covering me, but the weight has been taken off. I hear a car door open and slam shut very quickly. The blanket is finally pulled from my face, and I can see the person that was in the back seat is now in the front. But I can't see a face. It's not someone big, so it could be a woman. I am offered a drink by the male that pulled me into the car. I am so hot, and my mouth is so dry. He says he got an extra straw for me, so I don't need to worry about his germs. I am so grateful for that drink. My mouth feels so dry, like I've been screaming for a long, long time, but I can't remember screaming at all. All of a sudden, I hear him laugh. He is saying something about how he can't believe he got away with it. I want to tell him I want to go home. But I am so scared, I am afraid to make the man angry. What should I do? I just don't know what to do. I wish I did. I'm so scared. I want to go to sleep and pretend this is not happening. Why is this happening? Who are these people and what do they want with me? Reflection. Since my return back into the world, I find myself collecting pine cones. I ask the people I know now when they go on trips to bring me back a pine cone. I have pine cones from Lake Placid, Maine, and Oregon. My therapist and I finally solved my obsession. A pine cone was the last thing I touched before I was taken away by Philip. A hard and sticky pine cone was my last grip on freedom before 18 years in captivity. Stolen. My head feels like it's spinning. I think I must have fallen asleep. When I come awake, we have stopped again. It is still daytime. The man tells the other passenger that we are home and then whispers something else that I can't hear. I still can't see the other passenger, but can hear someone exit the car. The man that grabbed me tells me to be quiet and I won't be hurt. He says I need to be very quiet or I will upset his very aggressive dogs. I don't want to do anything to anger him or the dogs. He seems big to me. He says he is going to take me in the house and for me to be quiet and not say a word. He throws a blanket over my head and leads me somewhere. I want to go home. My brain feels less foggy than it did before. I tell myself I am having a dream, and any minute I will wake up and my mom will be there to hold me and tell me it was all just a bad dream. But of course, this is reality. I must survive. I don't ever remember having a nightmare quite this vivid. I was afraid of E.T. for a while when I first saw the movie. I used to think that E.T. would come to my house and be all dressed up like when the little girl in the movie dressed him. In my dream, he was mad at me for that, for some reason. That was a crazy dream, but nothing as scary as this. When we are inside the strange house, he takes off the blanket and instructs me to sit on the wicker sofa. He is a very tall man. He has very light blue eyes and brown hair that is thinning on top of it. His nose is kind of long, and his skin is a bronze color. It looks like he spent too much time in the sun. He does not look like a bad guy. He looks like a normal guy, like any ordinary guy you would see in everyday life. But he is not. He couldn't be, could he? He shows me a black thing with metal ends that look sharp. He calls it a stun gun, and he says he will use it again if I try to get away. He turns it on, and I hear the strange zapping sound I heard before when my body would not work. The sofa I'm sitting on has a lot of cat hair. I look up, and I see a cat sitting on the washing machine. The cat looks like a Himalayan Persian tortoiseshell, and there is another one that looks like a very fat tabby tortie. I ask if I can pet them. He says if they come to me, then I can. One comes over and I give it a pet. Its hair feels silky and real. I think this cat is the only thing that feels real right now. Everything else feels like a nightmare, but this is too real to be a dream. The man says to follow him. Reflection. Looking back on that day, feelings of dread come to mind. I was 11 years old and still very much a kid. I was very scared and alone. I didn't know what was going to happen, and if someone had told me what I would be enduring for the next 18 years, I would never have believed them. I had no idea what was going to happen to me. What this man had in mind for me was like a foreign language. I had never been subjected to any form of sexual abuse before, hadn't ever heard the words either. My only reference to sex was what I had seen on TV or movies and then acted out when playing Barbies, which would be in the form of Barbie and Ken laying in bed together side by side. That is what I thought sex was. I know, silly, right? But that is the truth. My Aunt Tina says that I once asked her how babies were made, and she explained it to me. I do not remember asking her this question, and I don't remember her answer to me. Even if I had understood or remembered what she told me, it still would not have prepared me for what Philip did to me. No amount of preparation could have helped me understand why another human being would do what he did to another human being, a little girl for that matter. I still don't get it. The Secret Backyard. I follow the man. I don't have a choice. There is nowhere to run. There is nowhere to hide. I have no idea where I am. Everything is turned upside down. All I can do is wait for my mom to come and find me. I wish I could be back at home right now. I would even like to hear a criticism from my stepdad, Carl. Anything familiar would be okay. Anywhere other than being here with this stranger that has hurt me with a stun gun. When we arrive at the bathroom in the stranger's house, he closes and locks the door. The shower is running, and the strange man says that he wants me to take my clothes off. No, I say. Why does he want me to take my clothes off? I am very self-conscious of my body. The man says if I do not do it myself, he will do it for me. I am too scared to move. My body is shaking, so I do what is easy. I just stand there. He pulls down my pants and takes off my shirt. I am naked and very embarrassed. He stuffs all my clothes, shoes, and backpack in a bag. He doesn't notice the tiny ring on my pinky. I am so relieved. I was afraid he would take that too. He takes off his clothes and I try not to look. He asks if I have ever seen a naked man before, and I answer no. He says that's hard to believe at my age. I have never seen a naked man before, and I know that I'm not supposed to look. The strange man tells me to look at him. I glance real quickly and want to start laughing in spite of my fearfulness. His private part looks so funny. In spite of myself, I smile. Sometimes I laugh when I'm nervous. I don't mean to. It just comes out. The man says to touch it. It is small and squishy. The man says to make it grow. In my mind, I think this man is crazy. This is the strangest, weirdest man on the planet. I do not want to touch his private part, but the man insists, so I hold it in my hand. It is soft and paler than the skin around it. He says that's enough and tells me to get in the shower. I want to resist, but the man pushes me into the shower. He gets in the shower too. He tells me to wash up and hands me the soap. I want to be asleep in my own bed, not here in the shower with this strange man. I do as he tells me, not knowing what else to do. He then asks me if I have ever shaved my armpits and vagina. I say no, I haven't. I think to myself, this man wants me to do the exact thing that I have wanted to ask my mom if I can do. But why does he want me to do it in front of him? My upcoming field trip was going to be to a water park, and I have been wanting to ask my mom if it was okay if I could shave my armpits and around my legs. I was embarrassed to be seen with all that hair, but I also didn't know how to ask my mom. The night before, I remember going to her bedroom wanting to ask her the question, but instead I just sat there and never asked. I wonder what my mom would have said if I had asked her the question last night. Now I am with this stranger who is asking me strange questions, and all I can do is think about my mom. My mom must be worried. Has anyone told my mom that I was taken by a stranger? How will she find me? The man shaves my armpits and legs, and then he says he's going to shave my vagina hair. Why? I think to myself. When he's done, he says I can get out of the shower. I feel like I am in a nightmare that I have no control over. Silent tears start spilling over my cheeks. They feel hot against my cold skin. I start to shiver. I am so cold. I try to stop the tears. I tell myself I must be brave. It feels like my life is not my own anymore. My whole body feels heavy, and I just want to collapse. This cannot be real, I tell myself. It's only a dream. I will soon wake up in my own bed. The man hands me a towel. I gladly wrap myself in it. It feels warm and safe. I want to bury my head in the towel. The feeling of safety the towel creates brings memories of when my mom would wrap me up after my baths. The floodgate in me opens, and my silent tears become giant sobs. The man looks like he doesn't know how to respond. He tells me to calm down and be quiet, that he is not going to do anything more today. The man takes me in his arms and offers comfort. I do not want comfort from this awful man, but there's no one else here, and I reluctantly lean into what comfort he gives me. Up until now, I have not cried one time, only on the inside. Now, I feel like a rabbit being comforted by a lion. I am so scared. My tears continue to run down my cheeks. I can feel them wet and warm. They once again become silent tears, running down my face into nothingness. The man is saying things, but I'm not listening. The man speaks again in a louder voice. I become afraid because his voice is stronger. I make an effort to listen. He says he's going to take me somewhere else and that I must be very quiet or I will get in trouble. If I'm quiet and a good girl, everything will be fine. I ask him if I can put my clothes back on. He chuckles and says no. I ask him when I can go home. He says he doesn't know, but he will work on it. I say my family doesn't have a lot of money, but they would pay a ransom to get me back. He looks at me and smiles and says, "Really?" I said he just needs to let my mom know where I am. He just stares at me. I walk in front of him down the small flight of stairs to the downstairs porch. Once again, he puts the blanket on me. I have nothing on but the towel and the blanket now. My backpack is gone. My clothes are gone. My shoes are gone. All I have is the tiny butterfly ring on my pinky that my mom gave me. I have nothing but this stranger and my feet to guide me. The first thing I feel is the hardness of concrete. Then my feet feel the tickling cold sensation of wet grass. I can't see my feet because he is holding me by the neck and my head can't go down. But I can feel the ground and I can hear a train. I think to myself, I must remember that there is a train nearby, so that when I am found, I can tell whoever finds me that I was being held somewhere where I can hear a train. The next thing my feet feel are sticks or some kind of small branches and dirt. Some are pointy and sharp, and I can also feel rocks which hurt my feet. I try to tiptoe, but it's hard because he is leading the way and walks very rapidly. The rocks pass, and now I feel we are back on hard, cold concrete. I hear a gate or fence being pushed open and closed behind me. We walk a little further, and I hear him fiddling with something that rattles and jingles. It sounds like a lock. I briefly wonder where the other person from the car is. I feel teeny tiny pebbles on my feet. He tells me to watch my step, that I need to step up to the step in front of me. I miss a little because I can't see it, but he has my arm so I don't fall. I make the step up and feel hard carpet on the bottom of my feet. Not the soft kind, but the low to the ground kind. I hear the door shut behind me. He leads me a little further into this room. Then we enter another door. He takes the blanket off my head, and I see a bunch of blankets on the floor, just like what I used to sleep on when we moved into Carl's apartment. It only had one bedroom, so Carl said I could make a pallet in the living room. That's what he called putting an A-crate mattress with blankets on the floor. This looks like that, minus the A-crate mattress. He says I can sleep there. All of a sudden, I realize how tired I am. I feel like I can barely stand up. My whole body is shaking from head to toe. He says he will be back later, and he wants me to stay in here and be very quiet. He says the door is locked and reminds me of the dogs outside that don't like trespassers, and says, to them, I would be a trespasser. He says he has to put handcuffs on me, but that they have fur on them so they won't hurt too much. I shake my head no and say I won't try to get away. He says he has to because he doesn't trust me yet. He says to put my hands behind my back. I continue to sit on the floor. He bends down and turns my body so he can put the cuffs on me. I can feel the cold metal and the soft fur. I don't like the way the cuffs feel heavy on my wrists. He helps me to lie down on my side. It is not comfortable to lay on your side with your hands behind your back. He says he will be back later to check on me and bring me something to eat. Then he is gone, and I can hear the lock being put back on the door. The tears start again, softly at first, then my silent sobs rack my body. I cry myself to sleep alone. Reflection. To this day, when I close my eyes and think back, I can still hear the sound of that lock. I can hear the squeak of the big, thick, soundproof door closing me in. It gives me a strange feeling in the pit of my stomach when I think of the many long hours I spent in that room all alone. Today, I sometimes struggle with feelings of loneliness even when I am not alone. I think this feeling began in that room Philip put me in. Hours turned into days, days to weeks, and weeks to months, and then years. I've spent a lifetime alone, or so it seems to me sometimes. I have gained a lot of freedom this past year, being with my family and meeting new friends and reuniting with old ones has been a dream come true. People and animals keep the loneliness away. I know the feeling of loneliness is just in my head because I am not alone, but it still creeps back at times. I do enjoy time to myself. I love to read and write and spend time with my pets. I don't always mind the feeling of loneliness. It is giving me the time to know who I am. However, my mind pulls me back to those days of confinement, and I feel myself needing to call a friend or make a plan for lunch. Anything to not be alone. I am working through these feelings. I enjoy life so much more now, and I try hard to appreciate each and every day. But deep down, I am still afraid it will be taken away. Alone in a strange place. When I wake, I am alone in a strange place. I wonder how much time has passed. I woke up crying, which is strange because I've never had a dream scare me so much that I've woken up crying before. I realize that my nightmare is real. Why is this happening? My body feels tight and it hurts. My mind wants to leave and be somewhere else. I struggle to gain a sitting position, but the handcuffs make it difficult. I finally manage awkwardly. Maybe I should just try to go back to sleep. My mind is worrying about all the things I was supposed to do that day. What happened when I didn't show up at school? Will I get in trouble? Does anyone know what happened? Where is my mom? Is she still at work? Is she looking for me? Did Carl see this man take me? Is he sending someone to get me? When can I go home? Will this stranger take me home? All these questions go through my mind. My head still feels fuzzy. I don't know what to do. I want to get up and see if the first door will open so I can see what's in the other room. But every time I try to sit up, I fall back down. I am so tired. I turn, so I am now lying on my back more, which is a little more comfortable. This room is small. My bed back home would not fit in this room. There is a window above my makeshift bed. There is a towel and blinds covering the window, so I can only see a little bit of light. It looks like moonlight. I wish I could see the moon. My mom and I used to love to sit out front of my grandma's house and look at the moon. We would debate about which moon was better, the crescent or the full. I always voted for the full, and she liked the crescent. I wonder what kind of moon is out tonight. It feels like I have been here forever. Has it been an hour or more? I have no way of telling. There are tall, heavy-looking tables in two corners of the tiny room I'm in. The legs are covered in carpet. There's also some strange-looking equipment on tables. I can't really see the tops because the handcuffs prevent me from getting up all the way. They are big, and from what I can see from this angle, have sliding dials on them. There's also a big pane of glass in the wall that separates this room from the next. The walls are made of some kind of wood. It looks like a lot of different woods, all mixed together to create a panel that has many colors. I think it is called particle board, but I'm not sure. I want to feel it, but instead scrape my knuckles along the side of it. It is very rough, and I think I got a splinter in my knuckle. I wonder what will happen to me. I can't get comfortable. I move from side to side. I want to get up and walk around. My legs feel like they are falling asleep and are getting cramps. I lay back down and fall asleep quickly. The towel on the window shows that the sun is up. This room is getting hot when I wake the next morning. At least I think it is morning. There is really no way for me to know for sure. I feel like I can't breathe. It's so hot. I am so thirsty and I'm starting to sweat. How much time has passed? I close my eyes thinking, will I ever want to open them again? Maybe if I go to sleep, then when I wake up, I will be in my own bed and this will be just a bad dream. I close my eyes and give in to oblivion once again. Reflection. He did come in that day to check on me. He brought me fast food and a soda. It's hard to remember day-to-day things after this point. I think he came in at least once a day to bring me something to drink and eat. I became totally dependent on him for everything. He would take off the handcuffs while he was there so I could eat. He brought in a bucket for me to use as a toilet. I hated when he would put the cuffs back on me when he left, so eventually I looked forward to seeing him and getting them off. Even though they were covered in soft fur, they still bit into my wrists and made my skin raw. It was hot in that room, and I would sweat buckets all day. He said he is working on getting a cooler for the room, and that would make it cooler for me. In the meantime, he brought in a fan, which helped a lot. I would ask him every day when he was going to let me go home. I guess I can kind of figure out the answer to that, even if I don't remember his exact words. He would try to make me smile with all these silly voices he would make. He had an English accent, a Texan accent, and an Australian accent. I feel this was all part of his plan to manipulate me into being compliant with him. He used his powers of persuasion to gain my trust. He became my entire world. I depended on him for food, water, my toilet. He was my only source of amusement. I craved human contact so much by then that I actually looked forward to him coming to see me. It felt like he was bestowing a gift to me, his presence. He was all I knew for months. I slept a lot during this time. There was nothing else to do, and sleeping helped to shut off my broken heart. I didn't have any more nightmares like that first one about being taken. I guess I was living the ultimate nightmare, so my mind couldn't think of anything worse. When I dreamed I could fly. When I would wake, I would have no concept of time. A little light leaked through the towel on the window, but other than that, not much light. I learned to gauge the time by Philip's visits. I knew it must be night when Philip would bring my dinner. He didn't touch me after that first day in the bathroom until one day, about a week later. The first time. I hear the lock rattle and know he is coming to feed me. I am very hungry today. I can't remember the last time I ate. I'm not sure how long I have been in this room. I tell myself I should start counting days because when I am rescued, I will need to be able to know how long I have been in this room. I have no way of keeping track of the days. The handcuffs are making my wrists raw and make it hard to use my hands. I have nothing to write on or with. He always brings me a soda, so I think maybe if I can save the paper on the straw, then I can count the days by how many straw papers I have. But he always takes the trash from me and puts on the cuffs, and there is no time for paper straw saving. I try to keep track of the days by how many times the sun sets. But I fall asleep so easily, and sometimes when I wake, it is already dark. I can see a little light coming through the window, but not much. It is either very early or the sun is setting. When the sun is up and the wind blows, the shadow on the towel that is hanging over the window looks like a person hanging from it. I have nicknamed this tree Hangman's Tree. One time, curiosity got the better of me, and I struggled to get up with the handcuffs, and finally got to my feet. I wanted to see what was hanging outside the window. I grabbed a corner of the towel with my teeth and wiggled and maneuvered until I could see out of the window as best I could. There was nothing but a medium-sized tree outside the window. Nothing hanging from it but its large, gangly branches and thick, full-size leaves. I am relieved to see just the tree. I don't know if I can stand any more strangeness. It's a very strange feeling to not go to school every day. I sometimes miss the routine I used to have. And sometimes it's nice to not have to get up and go to school too. But I am so bored. There is nothing to do in this place. I make up stories in my head a lot. I have made up one about a boy that has come from the stars. He flies around the world, and when he hears a child crying, he always comes to investigate. I imagine that one day this star boy hears me crying because I cry every single day. He thinks my cries are especially heart-wrenching, and so he combs the earth in search of me. When he finds me, he is able to open the window of my prison, and I take his hand, and he flies me all around the world. But in the end, he always returns me to my prison. I wonder why this is so. I can hear my captor's hollow footsteps coming from the room beyond. He enters the door and has a milkshake in his hand. At first I smile at him and want him to think I am doing well. For some reason, I think it is important for me to be happy around him. He comes in and crouches down, and he says today will be a little different. He says I can have the milkshake and something to eat after we are done. Done with what? All of a sudden, I am not hungry anymore. I have this terrible feeling in the pit of my stomach. I want him to go away. I want to go away. I tell him I am not hungry. I just want to go home. He puts the milkshake on the shelf and bends down. He says to take off my towel and lay back on the pallet. He takes off the cuffs and relocks them in front of me instead of behind my back. He then sits down next to me and explains what he is going to do. He stands back up and takes off all his clothes. I do not want him to do that. I start to cry. He takes my handcuffed hands and holds them over my head. I feel so helpless and vulnerable. I feel so alone. He lies on top of me. He is so heavy. I can't stop crying. He said he'd be quick, and it would be better if I didn't struggle, because then he wouldn't have to get aggressive. I don't understand any of this. He forces my legs open and inserts the hard thing between his legs and me. It feels like I am being stretched apart. I feel like it's going to come out of my belly. I am so small, and he is so big. Why is he doing this? Is this normal? I try to scoot away. I try to close my legs. He just takes hold of my legs and shoves them further apart. He is too heavy and too strong for me. He keeps my hands above my head. I try to think of anything but what is happening to me. Look anywhere except his face. I can feel the tears on my cheeks. He is making strange noises and grunting and sweating all over me. I can't breathe. He is so heavy. All of a sudden, he makes a giant grunt and puts even more of his weight on me as he collapses. I cannot do anything. I cannot move. He finally moves and asks if I'm okay. He says it would be easier on me if I didn't resist or struggle so much next time. He says it wouldn't hurt as much. I think to myself, If you didn't do it in the first place, then it wouldn't hurt at all. But I am too frightened by his act to say a thing in objection to him. In my mind, I am screaming, "No, I am not okay. Get off of me. Why are you doing this? What does it mean?" He says it is all over now and gets up and says he's going to get something to clean me up. I am bleeding down there. I am so scared. Am I dying? Why am I bleeding? He says it's okay. He just popped my cherry. I don't know what he meant. He leaves and comes back with a bucket of warm water and a washcloth. He takes the cuffs off and says he will go into the next room and give me some privacy to bathe. I wash up and wrap myself in the clean towel and then sit back down on the pallet on the floor. Milkshake, all but forgotten. Reflection. I had to stay in the same place I had just been raped in. I didn't know at the time that is what it was called. The word rape was not in my vocabulary. Today, that makes me feel terrible for that little naive girl. She is still part of me, and at times she comes out and makes me feel small and helpless once again. At times, I feel like I am still 11 years old. But something inside that frightened little girl made her a survivor, and she has made me the person I am today. That rape turned out to be the first of many frequent encounters. I don't remember if he came in every day to have sex with me. All I know is it happened more times than I can count. Each time it happened, I learned to go away in my mind until he was finished. I would make up stories in my head to pass the time. It was easy for me in those early days to escape into my dream world, because I had always been a dreamer and had my head in the clouds a lot. I used to lose all track of time, and it helped to keep me from going crazy. Knowing my kidnapper's name was not something I wanted to know. I remember thinking that I did not want to know his name because I had heard that once you know their name, they can never let you go. During the first week or so, I learned that my kidnapper's first name was Philip. I don't remember how I knew. It wasn't like he introduced himself. He revealed it subtly, without me realizing it. I can't believe how much I came to rely on him for everything. I remember the heat was getting really bad, and I was so thankful to him when he finally installed the air conditioning unit. It seemed he had an answer for everything. Philip seemed like a nice guy when he wasn't using me for sex. I even started to enjoy his company. I was naive and desperately alone. I was locked in a room all by myself for days on end, and he was my only contact with the outside world. All I could do was survive and endure. Hours later, as I lay staring at the ceiling, I noticed the forgotten milkshake has enticed the ants to come. I regret not drinking it because now I am so hungry my stomach is growling at me. There is a long trail of ants that leads from the window to the milkshake. Some have ventured further, and now I think they are starting to explore me. Maybe I smell so bad, it's attracting them. I don't know how long it's been since I had a shower. I haven't had one since that first day, when he had me get in the shower with him. Since then, the only cleanup I've had is with a bucket of water. The ants make my skin itch even worse than my unclean body already does, and sometimes they get in my mouth and leave a spicy flavor behind. The cuffs make it near impossible to scratch and flick them away. I wish I could get in a nice hot bath and just soak all the grime away. First kitty. He says he is going to get me a kitty. I have been telling him how lonely I am and how much I love cats, and all about the ones I used to have. I am so excited, I can't wait to have a kitty to talk to. All I do is lie here in this room all day long. I am so bored. He doesn't leave the cuffs on me anymore. One day, after he was done having sex with me, he said if I promised to be good, he would leave the cuffs off. He was going to trust me because he didn't want to put them back on me. He wanted me to be more comfortable. I thought of many things I could say, but none of them were polite, so I just nodded. After he